I got my first iPad right after it was, you know, shown by Steve Jobs. I had to get it because we were then developing an app, a Nosby app for the iPad. But it was still a consumption device and it was nice, it was fun, but that's it. 2 years later, I got an iPad with cellular connection and Retina display, and the iPad 3, and I started using it more and then more, and then I became kind of iPad only, which meant I was doing most of my computer work on the iPad. And then after years, there was the iPad Pro, and especially first the 13-inch iPad Pro, then the 9.7-inch, but then the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which is just an amazing device. It's an amazing computer. I've been using it for the last 1.5 years. And now we've got the new 11-inch and 13-inch iPad Pros, and they're amazing. I just got the 11-inch one, and I'm loving this device even more, and I'm using it a lot. And contrary to popular belief, this is a freaking amazing computer. And how it became to be one, what are the limitations of it, and the future of the platform. All of this concerning the iPad I want to discuss today on the podcast.
Cool. So I'm guessing most of the people listening to this episode already know the gist of what's new about the new iPad Pro, but do you want to just summarize it really quickly in 1 minute? How's the new 11-inch iPad Pro different from the old 10.5-inch iPad Pro?
Yes, several things. First of all, the design is radically different because there is no, just like in the iPhone X and XS, there is no home button. So it's just a frame, basically. It's more edgy, so there are the design is like not curved, like it used to be for many years now, the iPad. So there is the Face ID, because, well, there is no home button. And inside, the new iPad Pro has the newest, latest, and greatest Apple's own A chip, which basically means they're just freaking showing off with a device that's more powerful than basically most of the laptops being sold today with the Intel processors. And last but not least, it has USB-C instead of Lightning.
Yeah, which I did not see that coming. And one last thing, which is, or two small things, is it has a different keyboard case, which works a little bit differently. Most people would say better. And it has a version 2.0 Apple Pencil, which solves the big issues that people had, which is charging, stowing it, and switching between tools.
Okay, so before we dive in, I want to talk about the Pencil. This Pencil is how the Pencil should have been in the very beginning. It has its place. It's magnetically attached to the iPad. It's always charged. It charges when it's attached instead of discharging where it's close, like in the previous Pencil's case. And it's ready to go all the time. So I'm hoping to use it a lot more in the future.
Okay, so why, like, that sounds cool and all, but why did you upgrade it in the first place? Is it that big of a difference in practice?
Okay, so as I mentioned, the iPad Pro 10.5 inch is an amazing computer. It's an amazing device, and I've been using tons over the last 1.5 years. I upgraded for two reasons. First reason, you know, being on the edge of technology, I wanted to have the latest and the greatest.
Yeah.
So that was basically it. So let's just put it out of the way. I wanted to have the newest iPad. Second, I hate the Touch ID. I hate it because of my skin condition and because it's always been inaccurate for me. And having the same gestures and the same Face ID on the new iPad is very cool. And today, when I was setting it up, I realized how cool it actually is. Because, Radek, if you think about it, when you have the iPad and you set it up, the iPad is so big that the camera is either on top of it or on the side of it. So, which makes it really good for reading the Face ID. So I was setting up today lots of things, and they all very often required Face ID to work again and again, like launching one password and authenticating me, my face. And I was always afraid that my face is going to be somewhere hidden, but because like my fingers and my hands are like in different place than the camera, there was no problem. Every time I was recognized very quickly. So the whole process of authentication and security is just brilliant. So I wanted to have, again, latest and greatest, I wanted to have the Face ID, and I didn't want the home button anymore for all these reasons. And again, if I can have in the same form factor more screen and state, perfect. So I got the 11-inch, I have more screen, and still in the same form factor. But when I was choosing the 11-inch versus the 12.9-inch, the decision was pretty tough.
Yeah, I want to explain to people how serious you are about buying new Apple products. So I'm on a business trip to Wrocław to make a presentation on a meetup. I'm on the train, and a Michael texts me. Michael Riley texts me, and he says, "We need to FaceTime. This is important." Michael never says, "We need to talk. This is important." And I'm like, "Oh shit. Something went really, really, really bad." And I'm like, okay, like 10 minutes. I was just going between trains. I had to, you know, get off a train, and I'm waiting for the next train, but I can't wait. I call Michael, and I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" And Michael is like, "I have a serious problem. I need you to help me. Look at this." Michael switches the camera and shows me a table with three different iPads. And that was your problem. You couldn't choose between 11-inch and 12.9-inch. That was the serious issue you needed my help with.
Exactly. I mean, really serious, man. I'm choosing a computer for the future. I'm going to use this computer like for months and years to come.
For a year.
So I want to choose the right one. For a year. Yeah, basically. But anyway, I want to choose. I'm going to use it a lot during this year. So anyway, it's a serious issue because what they did with the 12.9-inch, let's call it 13-inch. I mean, it's just so, you know. So with the bigger one, what they did is they shrank it down because of, like, they could make it smaller, maintaining the same screen size. So they didn't, like in the 11-inch, what they did is they made the screen bigger. In the other way, they just kept the same screen, but just made the whole thing smaller. So what I did was I went to the Apple store on the day of the launch, on Wednesday, and I set up these two new iPad Pros, my old iPad Pro, and I was working on all of them and trying to figure out which one I want. And in the very beginning, I was drawn more to the big one because, you know, this is going to be my main iPad. I should have like more screen real estate. I want to have it, you know, as much as I can. So I should get the big one. So I actually changed my order to the big one. And I was pretty proud of my decision, but I wanted to have your feedback. So that's why, you know, it was serious, man. So anyway, after talking to you, after talking to a few friends as well, so I was really bugging friends at that moment, and working on the iPad, I logged into Nosby on all of the iPads. I was you know, going through tasks and everything. And what happened was that in the end, I reread my blog post from 2 years ago, where I wrote why, after spending half a year with the bigger iPad Pro, I chose the smaller one. And I reread it, and I was like, yeah, this argument still stands. I prefer the smaller one. Like, with the big one, the problem with the big one is just it's too big. And the iPad, I have it closer to my face than I would have a laptop or a normal computer. That's why when I have it closer to my face, when I'm holding it, like holding such a big iPad, like the 13-inch, is just too big. And what I remember from my stint with the big iPad, and it happened the same on this one, was that I would just have constantly two apps open in split view, because otherwise it would be just a waste of space.
Yeah.
You know? And the way I work on the iPad, I still subscribe to this paradigm of one app at a time. So I usually work on one app. I write something, I do something. Usually, of course, sometimes I do split view. Sometimes I do, you know, even split view and additional, you know, view to have more apps open. But this is only once in a while. Normally, I use one app. And using one app on such a big screen was just a waste. Like, iOS wasn't ready for it, like, or isn't ready for it, according to myself. So in the end, back and forth, I changed my order, called my reseller and told them, you know, no, I want the 11-inch. Now I have it. And really, the cool thing was that really, when I reread my blog post, I realized that the same arguments stand. And it was so refreshing to just read it again. And I was like, yeah, I was right then. And I'm right now. So in the end, I got the 11-inch. I'm happy. It's ideal size. And again, I got the bigger screen anyway. So that's great.
I think on iPads, you should have an option to have like scaled modes. You know how on the Mac, you have, you know, a native screen resolution, but you can make it, you know, like make things smaller on the screen so that you can fit more. And I think that's awesome because most of the time I use my 15-inch MacBook Pro, the native resolution, which is actually, you know, things are bigger than they are in the default settings because it's just most comfortable to read. And most of the time that's great, but some of the time I'm doing something, you know, serious and I need a lot of space and I'm going, you know, the equivalent of 4K display on this little, you know, not little, on this 15-inch screen, and I can do more. And I feel like the same is kind of true with this 10.5 or 11-inch iPad Pro. Most of the time, you know, this is great, and you want one app at a time, or even two, and that's fine. But sometimes this is a frustrating limitation that when you do two apps side by side on this smaller iPad, they're not full-sized apps. And like some of the things are hidden, but at the same time, as you're just like you're saying, you're holding it close to the, you know, to your face. So, you know, if your eyesight is good enough, like, man, all of those things can be smaller. Like I can tap on them. I can see them. Like, just make things smaller so that it can fit more text and more buttons. And you just have text scaling and it doesn't even work everywhere.
Exactly. I mean, just look at the size of the iPad mini. They're like two iPad minis side by side.
Yeah.
Actually, on the 11 inch. So you could technically really make it smaller. That's what I was hoping for. But still, on the 11 inch, there is this limitation that even side by side, they're not full scale iPad apps. But apart from this, you know, I think the 11 inch is perfect size. It's lighter than the previous one. And the cool thing is that when my reseller finally got an iPad for me, they called me that they have the iPad for me, but they don't have the color that I wanted, because I wanted the space gray and they had the silver one. The cool thing with the silver one is that it's still, you know, black in front. So actually it doesn't make lots of difference. It's a question of your preference. So I got the silver one and, you know, we will link in the show notes to my photo on Instagram, which I'm going to post. It is so similar to the original iPad, to the iPad 1. It's very, very similar.
In terms of looks?
Yes, because iPad 1 is also very edgy.
Yeah.
Like, it has edges. It's not as rounded as the following iPads were, because the iPad 2, remember?
Yeah, it was very rounded.
Was the first really rounded one.
The original had a flat edge, but then it had this big bulge.
Exactly. So it's thicker than this new iPad, of course. It's heavier, but you know, but having my silver new iPad Pro and this old iPad 1, like side by side, they are so similar. They're just very, very cool. So in my world, I just got the retro look iPad Pro.
All right, let's not talk about sizes.
Yeah,
I wanna talk a little bit about performance. You said that they're just showing off, and I wanna emphasize this. This is actually a very big deal. It might not seem like a big deal because it's not like that. There's a, you know, for most existing iPad users, there's not going to be a huge, massive jump in terms of performance because it was already overpowered, and that's exactly the point. And this is really important for where I think the future of computing is going, because I think, I believe for years that the destination for Mac is also to use ARM processors, you know, designed by Apple, not use Intel processors. And those new iPad A12X chips, they are, it's faster than my MacBook Pro. Okay, it's faster than this 15-inch, $2,400 machine. It's faster.
Yeah, so what you want to say is that my tiny, flat iPad Pro is faster than your computer.
Yeah, and it's really thin. It actually lasts the whole day in normal usage and not a couple of hours. It's so thin, yeah. It's so light, it's so comfortable to
it's drag not warm.
Around. It doesn't get hot, it doesn't have a fan spinning around, it doesn't need a absolutely massive and expensive charging brick. It's just this tiny slab of glass and aluminium, and it's faster than my big, expensive professional computer. And that's both depressing and reassuring about the future of computing, that even though Intel can't innovate anymore and is unable to make a big leap in terms of performance and efficiency, only small incremental gains, very slowly, Apple is still on the Moore's Law and we still get faster every 2 years.
Yeah, just this old iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch, it was already fast. It was already blazingly fast. And people were saying, now this is incredible. And now this one is just blowing it out of the water. So we discussed, we will link in the show notes, an episode where we discussed about the ARM and the future of the Macs. But yeah, I mean, this is... And somebody tweeted right after the presentation, somebody tweeted the link on YouTube, we'll link to it as well, to the presentation when Steve Jobs was explaining the switch from PowerPC to the Intel, and was saying that for them the most important thing is the performance per watt.
Yeah.
So the same argument can be used here. Like, I have this computer, and just think about how many of these small processors that I have can be squeezed in your computer. Like your computer can be so much faster. Actually, amazing.
It really, really, really is. I don't know about the iPad Pro, but in the iPhone X and XS, I think the CPU has a max power draw of 7 watts. And compare that to the 15-inch MacBook Pro, where the CPU itself has a max power draw of, I think, 45 watts, and on the new 6-core, even more, definitely more. And then there's the GPU, which I think has a TDP of 55 watts, and is still kind of crap. It's a massive, massive difference in terms of performance per watt, and also performance per watt per dollar. You also have to remember that. I don't know exactly what it costs Apple, but the retail price or the estimated price for this class of processor in the 15-inch MacBook Pro would be something around $450 from Intel. And people have estimated that Apple pays TSMC like $20 to $30 to make their CPUs. That's over 10x difference. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, it's actually not that fair, because Apple is also, you know, it costs Apple to design them, because they have the whole
So
there is additional cost there. But of course, with economies of scale, with shipping, you know, so many millions of devices, it's really no problem.
They ship hundreds of millions of devices with those CPUs. So even at hundreds of millions of dollars spent every year, or I don't know, every month on this, it's not that big of a deal.
No, it's not. It's, yeah, that's why it's amazing. Like, really, all the reviews were that were comparing these iPads and checking the benchmarks were just saying that Apple is basically showing off and showing the Intel that Intel cannot get its shit together.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about one thing. I'm worried about the fact that Qualcomm and other Android SoC manufacturers can't keep up, and they couldn't. They have not been able to reach Apple SoC performance levels since 2013, where Apple made a big leap with A7. And the reason why this is worrying is because just like Mac would be better if Windows was better, because Apple would be more motivated to keep innovating. Right now, they are on this like just this CPU team is living in the future and really 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 innovating. But at some point they might switch their focus and go do something else. And I really want to live in a world where Moore's Law is a thing and we get twice as fast every 2 years. And without competition, they might be like, we're good enough now.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So this slab of glass and aluminium is faster than your professional computer. Yeah. And as always, when you were reading reviews of the new iPad Pros written by professional journalists, inevitably you come up with a question. But can you really use the iPad Pro for professional work? Mm. Right? And this argument never stops. I mean, it's been there, like when I started using the iPad full time in 2012. It's been there when the first iPad Pro was launched. It's here still. And there are many articles about it. There are many reviews about it. We'll link to our favorite ones also below this episode. The thing is, many journalists and many people, and I remember you were at some point, they are in this situation where they are so used to the Mac that they what they want is a copy paste. They want to have the same experience but just faster and smaller and mm-hmm. I don't know what. And they think that because they are professionals, they're professional journalists, if they cannot get their, you know, do their work on the iPad, others can't as well.
Yeah.
And this is bollocks. This is bullshit. Because the thing is, whenever they write, and I think John Gruber made it very, very clear on his podcast, whenever the journalists say, but you can't really do professional work on this iPad, what they want to say is that, but really I can't do professional work on this iPad. This is what they want to say, because there are so many people, not just me, I'm not the unicorn. I mean, there are so many people who are just taking the iPad, using it professionally, you know, for writing, for what, I don't know what, for also some special purposes. They use it and they love it, just like I do. Of course, there are still some limitations and they are laughing at these limitations in these reviews, which is good because Apple should be, you know, we have to point out the limitations always to make sure that the platform improves. But I just, like, whenever I get these reviews, I'm like, write it in your first person. You cannot fathom using the iPad. You would like to use the iPad, but you cannot, you didn't even try.
Yeah.
So just write it like this. But don't say generally that generally iPad Pro is so powerful, but nobody can work on the iPad professionally. So yeah, that's the argument. And the cool thing is, what happened here on this podcast, that, you know, when you got your iPad Pro and you switched to using a lot, like iPad Pro a lot for many of your workflows, you realized that this thing really can be used for many things. There are limitations, especially when you're a programmer, because there is no good programming environment for the iPad, especially, you know, in your niche. But for the rest of the stuff, you even, you know, discovered that, whoa, this thing can be really used as a working computer.
Yeah, I have a ton of complaints about the iPad and about iOS, and we won't manage to do it in this episode. Next week, I'd like to tell you or retell the story of me attempting to go iPad only and what I learned and where I'm now and where I want to see the future. But I just, there are so many frustrations I have with the iPad. So many things I wish I could do. So many things I wish were less of a pain in the butt. But, and this is really important, I'm saying this from the perspective of someone who's on the cutting edge in terms of working on the iPad. I can do almost anything that I do on computers except for programming and like very niche weird things. The vast majority of tasks, again, except for my programming on my main job, I can do on this iPad. And I often do on this iPad. And only from this perspective, as a, you know, pro, you know, user and a pro, like really full-on nerd that wants to not just be able to do something, but do something the fastest way possible. From this perspective, I have a lot of complaints. But when, and this is what I would mean when I say, you know, iPad is annoying to use for professional work. But what they mean when they say professional work, they mean something else. They mean something where I would be like, oh no, iPad is great for that. When most journalists say professional work, they mean writing, they mean like basic browsing, email, communications through, you know, Slack and messaging and basic, you know, file and document, you know, managing and stuff. And that's like, no, that's actually the easy stuff. That stuff the iPad is great for. You have to learn how to use it. Like, yeah, there are some things that iPad is bad at, some things that it's just slower at than the Mac. But the biggest hurdle for people who have a problem with doing quote-unquote professional work on the iPad is not iPad being limited, but just being different. Just the fact that you can't expect to squeeze everything you know about computing into a smaller package without a cursor, but with a touchscreen, and have it be the same. Like it has to be different. It has to be reinvented. And that is annoying because you have to relearn it. But, you know, there are stuff where it is worse or bad or not good yet. But the problem that those people have is just the fact that it's different and you have to learn how to use computers from scratch.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, when I decided to go iPad only in 2012, which was very early, I had to change almost everything that I know about computers, you know, to accommodate to the iPad. And very often the journalists are saying, I don't want to accommodate to this. This has to accommodate to me. Well, I'm sorry. If you have a baggage of using a PC computer or a Mac computer for so many years, I'm sorry, man, I had to break it down for you, but you have to accommodate to the new thing because it's a new thing, it's a different thing. So there is this, you know, our human resistance to change. But why they are so frustrated very often and they're saying that we cannot do the professional and we cannot change? Because the appeal of the iPad is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, what this thing offers, apart from the performance that we just talked about, think about it. You have this small slab of glass and aluminium, which you can take anywhere, in almost any purse or any kind of backpack or anywhere. It's more powerful than anything. It's always connected to the internet if you have the cellular version.
Which you should.
It's got 10-hour battery life, really 10-hour battery life. So you hardly really need to connect it to the power source during the day. So it's always ready for you to work. And it's got this touch screen, so you can touch things. It's just so much joy to use. I mean, that's why I'm loving my iPad. That's why I loved my iPad Pro before, and I love it now even more. It's just so much fun to use. And when you work, having fun while you work is great. Like, I really love it. Like being able to draw on the screen, being able to touch things and manipulate them. It's fun. It's great and just makes for a better day and a better work day. So that's why...
Maybe you're going a little bit too far with the magic. It is pretty magical, but then, you know, life goes on. And I'm substituting the frustrations I have with the Mac with the frustrations I have with the iPad. Like not everyone is as joyful about the little things as you are, Michael.
Yeah, I know. But one of the things that I wasn't so joyful about is the switch to the USB-C.
Yeah. That's really interesting, though, right? You know, you follow sometimes like Apple news, Apple rumors, and there's this guy Ming-Chi Kuo or something like that, and this guy is like deep into supply chain in China for all the parts, and so he is the best predictor we have for like where Apple is going with the hardware, because he knows where, oh, this company started making a lot of money and started producing these parts. And like he knows. And, you know, oftentimes he makes predictions which people are like, no, this guy has no idea what he's talking about. And he was like, oh, the new iPhones won't have 3D touch. Like, what do you mean there won't be 3D touch? iPhone XR. Doesn't have 3D touch. And then he's like, yeah, new iPad will have USB-C. And I'm like, yeah, right. USB-C after years of lightning. No way. Yep, USB-C. No lightning. What the hell?
Yeah, and just yesterday I wanted to do the upgrade traditional way, so with the cable.
Mm.
And so I connected my old iPad Pro to my old MacBook Pro, the 2013 MacBook Pro, and I did the backup. And encrypted backup. And then I wanted to do the restore on the new iPad Pro. I bought a few different cables, USB-C, USB-A cables on Amazon. And I bought the most compact ones because I wanted to be minimalist and good and whatever. So I plugged it in and no dice. It's just plugging in and unplugging, plugging in and unplugging. It just doesn't work. And now I get it. Like the frustrations that you had before with the USB-C standard and Thunderbolt standard, like no cable, like there is no one standard cable. There is a charging cable, there is a data cable, there is a charging and data cable. They're like, yeah. So in the end, what I did is that I went just the Wi-Fi route. I just did the iCloud backup and iCloud restore. I just couldn't make it anymore. But it was really frustrating. Yeah, so my first batch of USB accessories is coming today. So, yeah, I'm going to be learning how to live with USB-C now.
It's the worst, though, right? Because on one hand, it's better because USB-C is a universal serial bus and not a proprietary serial bus. But then they're not going to put USB-C on the iPhone. And so you use those two devices as interchangeable, as two different form factors of the same thing. And you have all the adapters for all the things that you showed off recently on one of the last episodes. And for the foreseeable future, you'll have two of each.
Yes, exactly. I will have more dongles. Welcome to Dongle Town twice.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
All right, I think we should wrap up because it's getting long. So I'm setting up right now my iPad. The one tiny last thing I wanted to mention is that I got the iPad, I got the Pencil, which is great. I did not get the Smart Keyboard Folio yet.
Why?
Because I wanted to get the English International version, which they didn't have. My retailer didn't have.
Ah, with the correct Enter key.
Exactly. So
yeah, of course.
So I ordered it and some for an on apple.com, and it takes like 2 weeks to send it to me, like this small thing. So I'm waiting for it. So meanwhile, what I did is I dug up my old Zag keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard from 2012 when I started to be iPad only. I charged it and it works. I can type.
Of course it works. It's a Bluetooth keyboard.
Exactly. And I'm using it right now. It's okay, but the Smart keyboard was really good. Like is really good. So
okay, the size is slightly different, but as a temporary hack, does the Smart cover for the 10.5-inch iPad fit, or is the magnet situation different?
No, the whole thing is completely different. There is no connector. Smart connector is in different place.
Of course.
There is no way to connect it. No. So there's no way for me to reuse my old smart keyboard. So no, I have to stick with the Bluetooth keyboard, which is fine. I'm gonna just be using a lot, you know, more the iPad naked without anything, and with this keyboard, and I'll see how this goes. So in the meantime, I'm gonna just try that, which is just, you know, coming in again, retro thingy, which I like.
Okay, and I didn't think I mentioned the most important thing on my part, which is that. I was thinking about it, about this new iPad Pro. I was playing with it in a store. It's very appealing, obviously. In terms of hardware, it fixes all of the small annoyances I had with the iPad. But so far, I've decided not to get it for a simple reason. My iPad problems are software related and not hardware related.
Yes.
What I'm truly waiting for is not the new iPad Pro.
It's new
iOS 13 and iOS 14 and iOS 15.
Exactly.
And, you know, considering this is plenty fast and, you know, the new things are kind of nice to have, this is great for now. But we'll see. Maybe next year, if iOS 13 is all I hope it will be, in terms of iPad productivity, then having the new iPad with which just going to be faster is probably going to complement it really well.
Yep, I think, and chances are that really the iOS 13 will be very iPad focused. So, especially with this, I mean, with this powerful hardware, the only thing that is holding it back is the iOS. So, yeah. Here's to iOS 13.
I wish this machine was more hackable, simply for the reason. Well, okay, that wouldn't happen because of a different CPU architecture. But I wish some total nerd or a group of nerds managed to run macOS on this iPad Pro. Not because it's a good idea or a good user experience. It's just like, it would be so interesting to see how this amazingly powerful tiny device would perform with macOS. It would be something amazing to see. But yeah, that's not happening.
No, I don't think so.
All right. I think you had one pick for this week before we wrap up.
Yeah. The book I just read. I mean, I've read a few books right now, but this one just sticks out. It's really good. Bullshit Jobs: A Theory by David Graeber. It's really cool, and it's all about, you know, efficiency, productivity, and the jobs and the real jobs and the bullshit jobs. And the cool thing about this book is that the author raises many questions, gives lots of suggestions, but doesn't really give a definite solution. So it's a really thought-provoking book and very well written, very well written. It's been a while since I enjoyed the book so much.
Nice. I don't have any picks for this week, but I just wanted to give one tiny recommendation in case you were going to buy the new iPad Pro and you're a new listener. If you're buying the iPad Pro, if you're thinking about working on the iPad Pro, you have to get the LTE version and you have to buy the smart keyboard folio. Apple Pencil is nice to have, but that's going to depend on your use case. But LTE and the keyboard folio are mandatory. And yes, they are terribly overpriced, those two upgrades, but you just have to pretend that you've never seen the $800 price and that the price is $1,100 for the iPad Pro with LTE and the smart keyboard folio, because without them, this bare naked machine is not the actual iPad Pro experience.
Yeah, I got the 256 gigabyte version just to make sure that I have enough space for anything I want, and it's plenty enough. I mean, you're going to the professional movie 4K production, you don't need more than 256. So yeah, 60, I think with 64 you can still live by, but I just chose a little bit bigger because this way I'm safer.
My experience with the iPad, I've been going 64 gigs, and that's plenty for me. The most space that you know, you need the most space for music and photos, and I just I don't do that on the iPad. It's all in the cloud. So yeah, unless you're doing like photography or video or something like that, where you would actually need on-device storage, then 64 gigs should be enough. But LTE and keyboard, you need to have them.
Yeah. When I was in the Apple store, there was a guy who was ordering an iPad Pro, and he ordered the Wi-Fi version. And I was blunt enough to ask him, just, you know, although I'm not the salesperson, I'm like, think again. Because the magic of the iPad Pro is the fact that when you have the cellular, you are always connected to the internet. But he wouldn't budge. He said that he only needed the Wi-Fi, whatever. If that's all he needed, that's fine. But I totally stand by you here. The LTE version is just magical. You're always online, just like with your phone. It's perfect.
Yeah, you don't really understand the difference before you actually have it. Yeah, and then let's record on the 10th again, two episodes.
Ah, you're going so far ahead, man. Mm-hmm. Long-term thinker, I like it. I wanted to have, again, latest and greatest, I wanted to have the Face ID, and I didn't want to have the home screen anymore. The home screen. I didn't want the home button anymore.
We need to Face ID.
We need to Face ID.
Let me try again.
Like, we want to connect on a different level. We want a Face ID now.
Let me try again.